Elevator, hurry! My pursuer was about to reach the fourth floor. More noise rang out from the opposite corridor as another gargoyle tore its way through the building's walls. I ran a few yards down the hall, gunshots banging away behind me as Julie tried in vain to slow the monster. I took up position and waited for her to leapfrog past. She fired until her pistol was empty, and then turned and sprinted past me. At least 3,000 pounds of unnaturally animated living stone destruction and pure evil came bearing at me, blank eyes wide, stone mouth gaping. I slowed it down as I placed bullets into its knees and elbows, splashing molten rock onto the walls, which immediately began to smoke and smolder under the superheated fluid. The monster stumbled, limbs temporarily buckling, and face planted into the balcony floor. The sudden blow brutally shook the fourth-floor balcony. The old wood structure tore away from its supports with a dust cloud and a screech of bending nails and breaking boards, spilling the gargoyle over the edge. It clawed at the ledge, but the thing was far too heavy, and its talons pulled through the building materials. It fell silently, lacking the room to spread its huge wings, and a second later I was rewarded with a massive, echoing crash as the gargoyle smashed through the floor tiles and into the basement. "So long, sucker!" I shouted as I ran for the elevator. There was still another gargoyle on this floor. I could hear it breaking its way through the narrow halls to reach us, and there had been a third one on the roof that could be anywhere by now. The ceiling exploded. A porous rock claw grasped at my head. I dodged under it and dived into the waiting elevator. Dr. Jones stabbed at the buttons frantically as Julie fired on the monster's arm. We had found our third gargoyle. "Going down?" I asked, as I rolled over and patted my pockets, searching for another end-block clip. I was out.
"You got a better idea?"
Julie asked. It was taking the doors forever to close. The nearest gargoyle was battering its way in from the roof. Tiles and wood splinters rained down as it applied its bulk and fury against the feeble barrier. We only had seconds. Gradually, the door closed. Pulleys whirred as the elevator started down. "What happens if it comes after us while we're still stuck in here?" I asked absently as I pulled myself to my feet and drew my pistol from inside my waistband.
"Have you ever stepped on a ketchup packet?" Julie asked rhetorically. "Kind of like that, but a whole lot nastier."
She kept her 1911 pointed at the roof of the elevator car. Not that that would do us an iota of good if the gargoyle made it into the shaft. Dropping several thousand pounds of animated stone onto the car would probably kill us all instantly. It was a tense moment. I thought about telling the doctor about her husband's apparent heart attack, but I refrained. It wasn't like she didn't have enough other problems to worry about right then. Soothing instrumentals played over the elevator's sound system. "Kenny G?" I asked, also keeping my CZ-45 pointed upwards in a futile gesture.
"John Tesh," answered Dr. Joan.
Great. Not exactly the music I would have chosen as the soundtrack for my death. I had been hoping for something a little more dramatic. And with drums. It had to have drums. The elevator continued down. Crashing noises echoed down the shaft. The third floor gradually passed.
"Why aren't we stopping?" "The door is stuck on that floor. We were going to have it fixed," the doctor explained patiently. "Really, we were meaning to get around to it."
Wonderful. Our getaway vehicle was the slowest elevator in the world. We all jerked upwards in surprise as small bits of debris began to rain on our metallic roof. I did not think we were going to make it. Ray Shackelford sat on the floor,
staring blankly off into space. He was a surprisingly big man. In his prime, he must have been nearly as muscular as I was. His nose was hooked and had been broken many times. His hair was prematurely gray, long and unkempt. His face reminded me of the senior Shackelford and vaguely of Earl Harbinger. Julie must have taken after her mother. Thank goodness. "Since we're about to die together, my name's Owen. Nice to meet you," I told him. He regarded me sullenly for a moment before responding. "And I'm Napoleon Bonaparte. Nice to meet you."
"Chill out, kid. Just kidding. I'm not that kind of crazy."
"Julie, please tell me this moose isn't your boyfriend." Julie kept her eye on the ceiling.
"No, Dad."
"Good.
Damn, he's ugly. Now, will somebody get me out of these restraints? I can help here."
"Not a good idea," Dr. Jones stated.
"Joan, you old biddy, I'm not gonna wring your neck. You and Lucius have been right kind, but I can help, damn it."
Something heavy rebounded off the top of the car, shaking all of us, causing the lights to flicker and the easy listening music to stop. Finally, I shot two quick rounds through the roof. The sound from the silver 45 slugs inside the narrow confines was brutal. I was glad that I had put my plugs in.
"Hold your fire. That was just the doors coming down. Cut him loose, Doc. Get ready to bail," Julie ordered.
The doctor moved to unlock Ray's restraints. The digital display stopped at 2. A chime sounded. I knew that at any second several thousand pounds of gargoyle were going to land on us. The doors gradually began to slide back, not fast enough. I wedged my body between them and forced them to open faster.
"Go!"
We spilled into the hallway. A horrible screech of metal on stone came from the shaft as one of the gargoyles finally forced itself into the narrow passage. The elevator car was crushed as the massive creature smashed into it. The car and the monster disappeared down the shaft, hurtling toward impact in the asylum's basement. Dust billowed up as car and monster collided with the concrete floor.
"They're after my dad," Julie said as she glanced down the now open shaft. The dangling cable jerked wildly. "Crap. Monster's already starting to climb. Wish I had a satchel charge."
"I think one of them is after me," I said. "They seem to be ignoring everybody else who isn't shooting at them. If we can get out of here, they'll probably follow. The van got stepped on, but it should still be drivable."
"Let's go."
Julie quickly led us to the main room balcony. The stairs curved down to the common area and our escape. There was a huge hole in the floor from where the first gargoyle had crashed from the fourth floor balcony.
"Clear,"
she said after a quick scan revealed no giant monsters. If the sound coming from behind us was any indication, the elevator gargoyle was almost free. We ran down the stairs, jumping carelessly over wreckage. Dr. Joan gasped when she saw her dead patient Barney nearly cut in two. But she was a former monster hunter, and she did not shake easily. I stopped her with a firm hand on her shoulder.
"You need to tend to your husband. He's down that hall."
"What do you mean?"
Her eyes widened and her head bobbed as she swallowed in surprise.
"What happened to Lucius?"
"I think it's his heart."
But,
she stammered. Her eyes blinked in confusion. She was wearing bright blue eyeshadow.
"Not Lucius."
"You'd best go."
She nodded and ran in the direction I was pointing. She was fast for an older lady. I sure hoped that her husband was okay, and I also hoped that this worked and these damned evil things followed us out of here and away from all these defenseless patients. I ran around the edge of the massive hole in the floor. Wild sparks flew from severed electrical cables
and water poured from busted pipes. I saw a slippered foot sticking out from under some wreckage. Not all of the patients had run after all. Damn. Julie was at the smashed doorway, with her father standing right behind her. He was breathing heavily, not used to the physical exertion.
I don't see any of them. Let's head for the van.
I'll drive, Ray offered.
Oh, hell no, she responded. I felt it before I heard it, a deep rumble as a stone body rubbed on walls. A claw, as big across as my torso, crawled up over the edge of the hole. The monster pulled against the floor, trying to heave itself up and at us. A second gargoyle appeared above us on the ragged edge of the destroyed balcony. The elevator shaft gargoyle smashed its horned head through the wall on the second floor. Three pairs of blank eyes fixated on our position.
"We got company," I said.
All three creatures exploded forward at once. We reached the van in record time. Ray tripped on the broken stairs and almost fell. I caught him by his arm and pulled him along. Julie headed for the driver's seat. I had lost my keys, so I reached through the already shattered window and unlocked the passenger side door. I hurled Ray in head first, and I squished myself in beside him. Between our twin bulks, I was not even able to close the door. Julie turned it over. The powerful V8 caught with a roar. She slammed it into reverse and stepped on the gas. The nearest creature leapt off of the stairs and lumbered at us on its squat legs. I pushed Ray out of the way as I fired my pistol out the front window. The van whipped around in a squeal of rubber. My neck snapped back painfully as the rear end smashed into a parked Lexus with an MHI alumni bumper sticker. Julie put the big vehicle into drive and floored it. The van roared past the nearest gargoyle. It swung a claw at us, and with a screech of metal and sparks, the creature tore the sliding door completely off the side of the van. Julie swerved around the next monster as its talons ripped a huge gash through the sheet metal on the driver's side. We escaped in a spray of gravel. Ray flopped into the back seat. I pulled the door closed. In the rearview mirror, the gargoyles spread their huge wings and, with powerful legs, launched themselves into the sky.
"They're airborne," I warned.
"I bet they can't do 100, Julie replied. The van tore down the Appleton Asylum Lane at reckless and dangerous speeds. She continued to accelerate as we approached the gate. It was a very heavy-looking gate.
"Julie! Gate! Gate!" I pointed.
Wind rushed through the broken windshield. "I know. Buckle up. This is going to hurt."
"Honey, I don't think that's a good idea."
"Shut up, Dad." I quickly fumbled around for my seatbelt, snagged it on my holster for a panic-filled moment, and then got it buckled. The gate approached far too quickly. I closed my eyes and braced for impact. Crash! Our front end crumpled. The van shuddered, but our momentum tore the heavy gate from its rusted hinges. Julie turned hard to the side, and we slid onto the open road.
"That was awesome," was all that I could think to say.
"Yeah, that was cool," Julie said as she picked her glasses out of her lap and put them back on. "I don't see them. Are they following?"
"Ack!"
She struggled against the wheel as something huge collided with our roof. I turned in time to see a stone talon pierce the sheet metal over the rear of the van. More claws appeared as the creature wedged its way in and began to peel our van open like a ripe banana. I tried to get up, realized I was still strapped in, and then hit the button to set myself free. I fell into the back seat beside Ray and groped on the floor through the various gun cases. The van shook wildly as the gargoyle's weight shifted. I found the case I was looking for and unzipped it. I lifted the heavy weapon, inserted one of the huge magazines into the gun's side, and worked the heavy bolt. It was so long that it was difficult to turn the gun from the horizontal to point toward the back of the van in the tiny space available.
"Cover your ears!"
I shouted. Ray obliged. Julie was driving, and I just hoped that she had put her plugs in. Otherwise, the blast from the Coke can-sized muzzle brake on the end of the 50 BMG was probably going to blow her drums out. The Ultramag 50 was equipped with a 10X scope for precision fire at extended ranges. It had not been designed to be used inside the confines of a moving vehicle. I stuck the buttstock under my armpit and pointed the muzzle in the direction of the gargoyle. At this range, the barrel was halfway there.
Boom!
If the windows had not already been shattered, I had no doubt that the concussion of the 750-grain bullet would have done the job. The enormous slug impacted the monster at nearly 2,800 feet per second. Stone fragments embedded themselves into the seats, hot fluid sprayed the interior of the van, and I yelped in pain as some splashed on my unprotected arm. The back seats caught on fire. The gargoyle flinched as the massive chunk was torn violently from its arm. It did not, however, let go.
"Get off my van!"
I had four more where that came from. I worked the heavy bolt, ejecting the smoking brass case, and shoving another huge armor-piercing round into the chamber. I elevated the muzzle slightly and fired again. The gargoyle fell from the van as the second bullet pulverized its face. It pulled the rear doors clean off of their hinges. Monster and metal fell, clanking and clattering down the asphalt, pieces flying everywhere. We kept accelerating.
"Damn! That was loud!" Ray exclaimed.
"Julie, are you okay?"
I shouted.
"Fine. Hang on."
She pumped the brakes and somehow managed to keep the van on the road as we careened around a corner. The van was not a sports car, but it did manage to stay on all four tires. She accelerated out of the turn.
"If I can build up speed, I can lose them, but the roads are too curvy. If we push it, we'll end up in the trees."
"Is there a straightaway around here somewhere?"
"Son, you're in rural Alabama. Just how many straight roads do you think you're going to find?"
Ray asked rhetorically. I swore, climbed over the center seat, and positioned myself in the back cargo space. I scanned the skies through our new gargoyle-supplied sunroof.
"I don't see them!"
I shouted over the roar of the wind. I held on as Julie slalomed our box-like van around another bend.
"Ray, pass me that OD green case, the stubby one,"
I ordered. If we couldn't outrun them, we would outfight them. I spotted a huge black spot in the clear sky, heading right for us. There had to be some sort of explanation for how the creatures were able to fly so fast. They were huge. They were heavy, but they flew like birds. When this one folded its wings and dived, it came out of the sun like a Stuka dive bomber. I yelled a warning as I planted the rifle against my shoulder. The 50 weighed 32 pounds, most of that towards the muzzle. It was designed to be fired from a prone position with a bipod. I was about to use it while kneeling in the back of a wildly moving vehicle. Not the best recipe for success. Julie shouted something, and I was flung against the wall. I lost my balance and almost fell out the open rear of the van. Pavement rushed by, painted lines and a trail of fluid leaking from our damaged radiator, all a foot under my face. I scrambled to grab onto something. An air horn blew in protest as Julie swung us beside a loaded logging truck. We were in thick forest on a curving hillside road. This was not a good place to be stuck trying to pass somebody. If another truck came around the bend, we were going to be road pizza. I pulled the heavy weapon up, searching for the diving gargoyle. I spotted it above us, losing altitude quickly. I snapped the rifle to my shoulder, struggling to find the creature in the narrow field of view of the scope. One of the world's most powerful sniper rifles had never been meant to be used like a skeet gun. I shot. Missed. Worked the bolt. Shot. Missed. The recoil pounded me each time, but I did not have time to notice. Last shot. The creature was larger now, looming above the logging truck and heading our way. It spread its wings to control its descent, aimed directly at us. It flashed back through the scope. I raised the muzzle and let the heavy weight bring it down. I fired as something darker than sky filled the lens. The 50 BMG did a real number on the gargoyle's wing. A hole appeared in the stone membrane. Molten stone splashed as one wing dipped, and the creature crashed into the top of the logs. The heavy chains kept the load in place. It lashed out with its talons, sinking them deep into the wood and anchoring itself to keep from falling. Blank eyes locked onto our van, and it immediately began to slink toward us. I dropped the now empty rifle to the floor, reached around to take the green soft case from Ray. He was one step ahead of me. He had removed Abomination and held it out for me to grab. The gargoyle was moving, ready to leap onto our van. Julie was trying to get away, but the truck was swerving in panic. We were in range of the gargoyle. I reached forward and pulled the heavy trigger on the underslung grenade launcher. My aim was a little off. The 40-millimeter shell struck under the gargoyle, but it was close enough. The explosion was more of a muted thump, turning green logs into kindling and snapping heavy safety chains. The gargoyle fell back, hanging onto the load now by one talon. The trucker laid on the horn, confused by our gunfire and whatever the hell was landing on his trailer. Julie had not been able to pass on the narrow, curvy road. The driver must have decided that we were the threat, because the truck drifted into our path. Julie would have made a great NASCAR racer. She braked, dodged the trailer, then took us onto the shoulder and partway into the grass to avoid the oncoming tons of steel and wood. The van thumped and rattled over the ruts and potholes. An unfortunate armadillo blundered into our path and was sent on its way to armadillo nirvana. Unfortunately, our loss of speed put us right next to the gargoyle clinging to the trailer. It launched itself, smashing into our van with the force of a car wreck. I lost my balance and flopped about in the cargo area. Claws pierced through the sidewall as the gargoyle latched on. I shouted for another grenade, and Ray thumbed through the case. When he found one of the yellow-painted shells, he handed it over. I could not use the grenade against a target so close, and the shotgun shells would be virtually useless. The van swerved back onto the road behind the weaving trailer. Julie looked in the mirror, saw me loading the grenade, and shouted something.
"What?"
The grenade clicked into place. Farmland and forest flashed by. One stone arm came searching for us, tearing through the van like it was made of tinfoil, ripping through the still smoking center seat and sending foam bits into the rushing wind. Ray pushed himself as far away as he could without falling out the opening where our sliding door had been.
"Hang on!"
She stepped on it, and we pulled behind the accelerating semi. She timed it perfectly, waiting for the end of the trailer to sweep past, red-flagged log ends only feet from her open windshield. The van pulled alongside the rear of the trailer,
and Julie swerved toward it. She was going to attempt to scrape the gargoyle off. I pushed myself against the far wall as claws swept past. The arm was still stained with red. It was the gargoyle who had gotten poor, crazy Barney. The van shook as Julie played bumper cars with the 18-wheeler. Ray looked at me with wild eyes.
"I taught her how to drive," he said.
Julie leaned on the wheel, forcing the gargoyle into the rear set of trailer tires. The van screamed in protest. Truck tires popped in a moving cloud of smoke and rubber. The giant claws were sucked away from my face as the gargoyle was pulled and partially crushed under the trailer. Much of our van was peeled away with it. We swerved from the trailer, back onto the shoulder, but then back again as our monster side tires blew and sent us out of control. Somehow the gargoyle was still hanging on. Chains snapped, and logs spilled onto the narrow road. For an instant, time seemed to stand still as we tilted. Then it sped forward as we rolled onto our side in a fury of sparks and tearing metal. I fell as down changed to sideways. Somehow I managed to hold on to the back seat for dear life, a torn opening gaping below me, hard pavement flashing by. Luckily, we only rolled onto our side and no further. The van gradually slowed as our remaining energy was spent against the pavement. The seat cushion tore in my grasp, and I slipped from safety. Crying out, I fell through the gap and onto the road. Rolling, pain, tearing, everything a wild flashing of movement, cracking myself against the pavement and leaving inches of skin behind. I slid and flopped to a wet stop. I lay there in the road. It hurt to think. Excruciating agony. I looked at my hands. Blood. All down my arms, a bloody road rash. Bits of gravel were embedded deep into my skin. I tried to sit up. I realized that my clothing hung in ragged tatters, torn away by the gripping pavement.
"Son of a bitch! Worthless fucking monster, bastard, asshole!"
Blood spattered as I shook my fist in the air. I forced myself to stand. Grimacing against the road rash, I stumbled down the road. The van was 30 feet away, resting on its side. The logging truck disappeared around the bend, torn tires flopping madly. The driver was no doubt glad to be away from the crazy people who had been shooting at his load. A few huge logs lay splintered, blocking the way. A tranquil and cozy farmhouse stood 100 yards to our side, behind a small pen full of goats. I concentrated on putting one foot in front of the other. I had to reach the van. There was still one uninjured gargoyle somewhere, and I was fresh out of big guns. The van's wheels had stopped turning. The engine had died. There was an eerie silence, punctuated only by ticking noises coming from the hot engine. A green pool of antifreeze was spreading. As I approached, my pain-fogged mind realized why the van had not kept rolling when we had flipped on our side. The gargoyle was wedged underneath. Its massive bulk was partially crushed into gravel. Silver liquid poured from its interior, steaming and smoking on the pavement. One of its arms was missing. The other ended in a jagged stump. Its lower half was trapped under the driver's side. It continued to stab at the roof with its stump, searching for Julie and Ray. My hand flew to my holster,
only to discover that at some point of my road rash roll, my CZ had been knocked loose and lost. I spotted the 50 lying in the road, scope shattered, scuffed, and battered. It looked operable, but it was empty. I picked it up to use as a club. The gargoyle shoved its pointed stump through another spot in the roof, directly over where Julie would have been buckled in. I heard a scream of pain come from the van. The stump came out. The jagged end was splattered with blood. The pain stopped. My anger focused like a laser beam.
"Hey!"
I shouted, limping toward the wounded beast. Its gray eyes turned in my direction.
"Yeah, I'm talking to you."
It tried to move against me, but it had been hopelessly damaged by the truck. It did not matter. I was coming for it. I was not going to let it get the others. I raised the heavy rifle over my head and charged. It swung its stump. I stepped out of the way as it crashed into the asphalt. I smashed the rifle into the stump again and again. The buttstock broke off, so I shifted it in my hands and used the barrel like a bat. I pounded the stone arm until it quit trying to move, and then I stepped over the dusted remains and with a cry of rage swung at the monster's head. I struck it again and again. The barrel bent, and my hands bled as I swung at the unyielding rock, steel bar against stone face, over and over. Muscles straining, I continued to shout as smoking fluid spilled from the creature's broken face and spattered me with burning bits.
"Die! Die! Die!"
I raised the barrel and drove it forward like a pack bar. The creature twisted its powerful neck, and I lost my weapon. I spotted something else that had spilled from the back of the van. I left the creature for a moment, retrieved the tire iron, and then went back to work. I hammered the creature as it twitched and thrashed. Finally, it quit moving. The molten stone that served as the creature's blood formed a smoking puddle and then gradually solidified as it cooled. Cracks formed in the stone body. Perhaps it had never truly been alive, but it was certainly dead now.
"Can anybody hear me?"
Gasping, shaking, I went to the front of the van and knelt before the shattered windshield. Julie was trapped on her side, and there was blood on her shirt. Far too much.
"Are you okay?"
"I whacked my head, then got stabbed."
She gestured weakly at the hole the monster had just punched through the roof.
"How bad?"
I asked frantically as I tried to gently pull her through the window.
"Hurts."
She had her hand pressed against the top of her shoulder.
"I can still move."
I pulled her out and helped her sit. The entry wound appeared to be through the flesh above her collarbone and into the muscles of her back. It was bleeding, but not very fast. I did not know squat about anatomy, and I had no idea how deep it had penetrated.
"Dad? Where's my dad?"
"I don't know. Just keep pressure on it." I kept scanning the sky. There was one gargoyle left somewhere.
"Find him, please."
"What about you?" I asked.
"I'm fine. I don't think it's that bad. Find him, Owen. Keep him safe."
Her eyes rolled back, and her head dipped forward. I caught her.
"Shit. Julie. Julie! Come on! It's going to be okay. Julie!"
I shook her. She did not respond. Blood rolled out of her hair and down her cheek from her head wound. I rested her on the ground and went through the window for the first aid kit that was stored under the passenger seat. I tore a wider opening in her shirt. I pulled out a package of quick clot, ripped it open, and poured it into the hole in her shoulder. I stuffed a bandage over the top of that. It wasn't much, but it was the best that I could do at the time. I felt the rush of air before I heard the beating of stone wings. The final monster did a pass overhead, slowly circling. Wings spread, it landed 20 yards away and perched on top of one of the many spilled logs. The huge wings folded, and the creature put its long forearms down until its clawed fists rested on the ground. It began to crawl toward us. It was the size of a compact car. All I had was the tire iron. I flung the tool at the creature. It ricocheted harmlessly away. I abandoned Julie. No matter how much I did not want to, I did not have much choice. I dived into the van, searching for a weapon, any weapon, but preferably a really big gun. Stone feet crunched as it made its way closer.
"Hello there, big fella. I think I'm the one you're after."
Ray. Julie's dad appeared out of nowhere. Looking a little worse from the accident, he limped calmly toward the monster. The gargoyle stopped, seemingly confused by having a human not run from it or shoot at it.
"No reason to kill these others. You want me? You can have me."
The gargoyle turned away from the van and started for Ray. He made no effort to evade the monster. He spread his arms and walked straight toward it.
"Come on, that's a good monster. Yeah, that's a good boy. Just kill me and get it over with."
But the gargoyle had not been dispatched to kill him. The cursed one was looking for information. The monster reached out and grabbed him around the waist with one gnarled claw, easily lifting him into the air. The creature spread its massive wings, preparing to leap into the sky. My hand landed on Abomination. Somehow the brutal, stubby shotgun grenade launcher had not been tossed out of the vehicle. I hugged it against my bloody chest and crawled for the exit. There was no way I was going to be able to make it in time to save Ray, but I was going to try. The monster crouched, building energy in its powerful legs, wings spread a full 40 feet across the road. Ray was tucked easily under one arm. The monster was not even struggling. Julie was still out. I pulled myself along, trying to think of something, anything which I could do to stop the monster. The gargoyle shook as the heavy bullet struck its head. The weight of the impact was enough to jar it. The boom followed a split second later, as the sound caught up. I pulled myself out of the van, shotgun lifted ahead of me. I had no idea where the bullet had come from. The second mystery shot collided with the creature's upper arm, splattering liquid stone from a pierced joint. It spasmodically dropped Ray Shackelford to the pavement. Ray lay there, unmoving. I flipped the selector to full auto and dumped 20 shells of alternating slugs and buck into the monster as I charged it. The shot was mostly useless, except for the few pellets that struck joints. The slugs, however, carried quite a bit of energy and disoriented the creature further. I snagged Ray by his arm and dragged his limp form away from the monster. If I could get him far enough away, I could use my grenade. The mystery shooter fired a third shot, striking the monster in the neck. The gargoyle raised its hands to the injury
as rock splashed forth. I dragged Ray back by Julie and dropped him. I turned toward the monster and aimed Abomination, fingers seeking for the 40-millimeter launcher's heavy trigger. I did not know for sure if we were safely out of the minimum safe range for the blast radius, but I did not have much choice. The gargoyle reared up, wings spreading in a roar. I pulled the trigger. There was barely enough distance for the grenade to achieve the rotations necessary to disarm its safety mechanisms. The heavy shell impacted just under the gargoyle's chin. The thump of the explosion shook me, and I was pelted with stone and bits of super-hot liquid. The gargoyle fell backward in a cloud of dust and fragments. Its chest was ragged, blasted, and scorched. It shrugged off the impact and wobbled to its feet. Aw, crap. It took two hesitant steps, weeping cracks spider-webbing across it, before it shattered like a dropped glass, stone clattering onto the pavement in a spreading pool of silver. I knelt beside Julie. She was breathing, and the clotting agent and the bandage seemed to be working. Her pulse was decent. Not great, but decent. Her head wound looked pretty ugly. Ray was mumbling something and waving at the air.
"Hey, hey, we're the monkeys, and we like to monkey around," he sang.
I resisted the urge to put my size 15 boot through his head.
"Are you folks okay?"
a voice called. The man was older and had a thick southern accent. He came walking tentatively from the nearby farm, an embroidered NRA hat on his head and an enormous bolt-action rifle in his hands.
"What in the hell was that thing?"
"Gargoyle. Animated monster. Bad mother."
"Damn!"
He saw Julie, blood-stained and unconscious.
"My wife called the cops and told them to send the paramedics. They're coming out of Camden, but they should be here right quick. Brother, you look like you need them your own self. You look like hell."
I looked down at my road-rashed arms. Blood was welling up from several spots around embedded gravel, and there were a few spots that appeared to be totally devoid of skin. It really stung. Thus far, I was showing a bad tendency to get my ass kicked in this job.
"That was some good shooting back there," I told him. "You saved us."
"Thanks."
"Yep. I was in my living room when you crashed. I saw it right out my window. Saw the big monster thingy hanging on the side, so I grabbed my big gun."
He shook the heavy rifle.
.458 Winchester Magnum. "And to think my wife told me, 'Carlisle, you don't need no damn expensive elephant gun. What are you going to do with an elephant gun?' Women. Showed her."
Amazingly enough, my wallet was still in my pants. I thumbed through it until I found the business card with a little green smiley face with horns. I had not had the chance to get my own made up, so Harbinger's would have to do. "Tell you what, Mr. Carlisle, if you ever get tired of farming and want to kill monsters for a living, give this guy a call. Tell him Owen Zastava Pitt sent you. I'm going to pass out now." I wearily slumped down next to Julie, ignored Ray's babbling, and settled in to wait for the ambulance. I was unconscious in seconds. Chapter 16. The old man was waiting for me on the steps of the bombed-out church. He was whittling away at a small block of wood with a tiny pocket knife. The world of the destroyed town was once again whole and complete. Battle-damaged, but at least there were no gaps of nothingness. Snow crunched under my bare feet, yet it was not cold. In my dream, I was not in pain. I received a scowl and a firm finger shaking as I approached.
"Boy, you're not very good at this job. Werewolf scar you, white paralyze you, fall off boat, vampire beat you, policeman beat you, gargoyle chase you, and now you fall off car. Moving car at that. Maybe I think we should have picked some other person."
He continued shaking his finger. He reminded me of my Czech immigrant grandfather, easily exasperated and often having a hard time expressing it.
"You can no seem to help. You are like, how you say, punching bag. You say, 'Hey, monster, here I am. Hit me in head.'"
"Look, I'm pretty tired of getting my ass kicked, too. You want to pick somebody else to bug? Feel free." I sat down beside him on the steps. I could not tell what he was carving. One thing was for sure. He did not appear to be very good at it. "I need to get back. Julie needs me. I need to wake up."
"Sorry, boy. Not can do. You are hurt. Need time for body to rest. You must take time for other things now."
"I've got an idea, then. How about some straightforward answers for a change?"
"Bah!"
He spit in the snow.
"You want answers? I give you answers. I try to help you, boy. Something I not can say, I can only show. It's hard to do, you know."
"Why did the cursed one go after Julie's dad?" He shrugged.
"He's just like you. Always wants the straight answers. Just like you. Even has the same questions."
"Where's the place of power? And when's he going to use it?"
"See? What did say? Same questions. How am I supposed to know this thing?"
I picked up a rock and hurled it against some rubble. I was rewarded with a crash.
"Boy, you're mad, yes? Very angry?"
I nodded. The old man paused in his carving for a moment and patted me gently on the arm.
"You are mad because girl is hurt. Old doctor is hurt. And some of crazy people get smooshed by gargoyle, yes?"
I did not respond. After a moment, he got tired of waiting for my answer.
"Hunters must learn not can save everyone. Sometimes not can save oneself, even. It's just how it is."
He trailed off.
"Bah! Enough talk. Time is short. You wake up soon. I try to show you more memories."
"Not anything recent, I hope," I said fearfully. My brief encounter with Lord Machado's mind had left me very uneasy about that idea. I did not want to risk that again, because I had a sneaky feeling that I might not wake up from it.
"No, his old memory again. Much safer. He probably not know about this. I not strong enough to try new memory. Too dangerous. Put worms in your head. Eat your brain out."
I did not dare ask for an explanation of whatever the hell that was supposed to mean.
"Listen, boy. Hard to explain. This cursed one, I not can show you things that are in his mind now, for he will know. But these other things, they are long ago in his past, buried like body in ground. He not pay attention to them now anymore. So we sneak in for a look. He not know. You shut up and learn."
"How can you do that?" He scowled as he searched for the words.
"I stuck here because of stupid artifact. Because of cursed one. I not can move on. trapped for a long time. Cursed one forgot about me. But he, how you say, underestimates things I do to try stop him. I sneak chance to talk to you, to help. He not expect that. Now shush. See what you have done with questions? Waste much time.
He set aside his carving, folded his knife, carefully put it away, and placed his hands on my face.
Let's do this thing, I said, with more courage than I actually felt.
The blasted town faded away. Lord Machado's memories. I settled into them like an actor taking on a role. I was immersed into the senses of a man who had long since ceased to be a man. The memories were hazy, fragmented, but the important things had engraved themselves deep into the cursed one's mind. The priestess Corinaha led me deep beneath the pyramid. I followed, hoping to find answers to my questions. My reign over the city was a success thus far. Treasure filled my coffers, and my small army was training a much larger army of local conscripts. She had been good to her word. The city did not just abide me as a conqueror with an iron fist. They were treating me like their true king, and perhaps, dare I say, their god. I could grow used to being worshipped. She had told me of their dark and secret knowledge. The priestess's offer had been intriguing. Eternal life and strength. An immortal army under my command. Powers so great that not only could I control this new land, but I could return to my old and take upon me the very birthright that was taken from me. If the words of Corinaha were even partially true, I could return home and take the very crown, and the crown of any kingdom I desired. I desired all of them. King Manuel the Great, I would show him who the Great One really was. Philip and his blasted Spaniards would be next. After that, why not all of Europe, forcefully united under my banner? If a fraction of the dark secrets the priestess had whispered to me were true, then all of that would be a simple task to accomplish. And from the signs that she had shown me, I believed her to be telling the truth. I followed her father into the darkness. The priestess's hips swayed beneath her thin robes. She was a wanton creature, beautiful and cunning, wise in many arts unknown in my homeland. I had already taken her as my concubine, as was part of our initial agreement. It had been a very beneficial arrangement indeed. It had legitimized my rule over this people, and I enjoyed the benefits befitting a man of my station. The torch in my hand flickered and spat as damp winds traveled down the tunnel. I had a brace of pistols in my belt, fresh matches stored in a wax-tight pouch, and the very axe that was the source of my family name slung over my back. Yet somehow I still felt uneasy. There was a darkness under this pyramid, not just darkness of the eyes, but a darkness of the soul. Friar de Sousa had attempted to warn me away from the priestess and her strange cult. I had discovered him trying to send a messenger back to our ships on the coast. The note had been intercepted. The Jesuit had been worried that I was descending into madness and following a pagan religion. And especially damning, he wrote of the riches of the city and how I had thus far kept our expedition a secret from both the crown and the church. He had been a kindly man, wise and merciful, and his knowledge of languages had been a valuable tool of conquest. It had saddened me momentarily when I had ordered him burned at the stake. Of course, to keep that fact from the men, I had blamed it on the locals, and had had 500 of their priests executed, supposedly in retribution. Appearances had to be kept up, after all. Some of the men had been suspicious, but as long as I kept them supplied with riches, I was not worried about their loyalty. Sacks of gold would satisfy even the most pious amongst them. The Crown's military governor had no knowledge of our expedition's location, so my troops were effectively sealed from the outside world. My secrets were my own to keep. We walked for what seemed like hours, always down, always descending. The walls changed from stone and mortar into natural rock, and then finally into something else. Something I had never seen before. Slick, soft, and oily, almost pulsing with its own strange energy. Out of the corner of my eye it would sometimes seem as if the very walls were moving. Finally we entered a huge space, deep in the bowels of the earth. I could not tell how big it was, but my meager torch could illuminate but a small portion. The floor was smooth and slick, and I had to be careful to maintain my footing. Water drizzled down from above, splashing upon my armor. The air was heavy, and did not taste like air that should be breathed into the lungs of men. It was salty, and the cavern smelled faintly of decaying fish. Korinaha led me toward the center of the vast darkness. We walked for miles. I realized that if she had so desired, she could have run out of the circle of torchlight, and I might not have ever found my way out. A lesser man might have felt fear at that, but not I. The temperature dropped until I could see my breath. The floor became softer, and my boots left impressions in the oily surface. The priestess halted in front of the first landmark we had happened upon in the otherwise featureless room. It was an obelisk of black metal, tall enough to disappear into the darkness above, yet so thin that I could not comprehend how it could stay upright. The object had been inscribed with strange writing, not like the now familiar picture writing of the civilization above, but something rather far more complex. The runes appeared to move under the flickering light of the torch. A small, unadorned stone box sat in a tiny alcove of the obelisk. It hurt my eyes to look directly at it, as if I had stared into the sun.
"What is this thing? Is this the key? Tell me now," I ordered.
She smiled at me wickedly, dark eyes flashing red in the torchlight.
"Yes, Lord Mashado. This is the key to unlock infinite power. The very power of the Old Ones themselves, and they have been waiting for one such as you."
"Such as I?"
She placed her delicate hands on my bearded cheeks, and her eyes bore into mine. They seemed to flicker unnaturally in the light of the sputtering flames.
"Yes, my lord. The Old Ones left this device. It is ancient, older than this world. It is an item of such power that it was never intended to be used by mortal man. It is a device intended for the service of what you know as angels or demons, and even then best left alone even by them. Yet every 500 years a man will be born, a mortal with the power to use this device and bend it to his will. You are this man. You are the one who has been prophesied by the Old Ones."
As she spoke, I felt the air rush past, as if something incomprehensibly huge had just taken a breath.
"Tell me this prophecy, woman."
She took her hands from my face and gestured at the obelisk. The runes changed, and were now written in the Latin letters I had learned as a youth. "He will come.
son of a great warrior, taught in the skills of the world, yet drawn to the sword, his very name taken from the weapon of his fathers, given a quest by the crown to defeat